And one of the things I should say for variable rate irrigation, some of the drivers of that are the prairie pothole region in North Dakota, where we've got these, okay, so I've got 2 acres of a marsh or, you know, some wetland in the middle of my field, and I want to shut off the water and not irrigate the ducks and the reeds and things like that. Or another real important one is the potato farming situation, where if potato farmers have a depressional area and they don't want to overwater that depressional area, the crop is there, but if it's overwatered, then they can have fungal diseases and have problems with potato quality, either in the field or subsequently in the bin.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights, the right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Brian Arnell, and I am coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, we have on Dr. Dean Still, who is Associate Professor of Irrigation and Environmental Engineer with the Agriculture and Biosystems Engineering Department at North Dakota State University. Dr. Still's primary research focus has been on irrigation water management, with example projects have included field studies on irrigation schedule methods, subsurface drip irrigation, planting configurations, remote sensing to estimate crop water use, and soil water sensors for irrigation management. He also teaches sophomore level courses on the use of spreadsheets and computer aided design software for engineering agriculture use, as well as a senior and graduate level courses on soil water conservation and engineering. Dean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. It's an honor to have a chance to talk.
Well, Dean, so tell us about your path to being an irrigation environmental engineer.
Okay, so I grew up on a farm in southern Minnesota, dairy and hogs. Kind of asked my high school counselor about, you know, what should I do? And he said, well, maybe you should consider engineering because you like math. So I came to actually 350 miles or so up to North Dakota State University looking at, of all things, electrical engineering. Glad I didn't go there. Hats off to the electrical engineers, but not for me. Came here in Fargo and found out there was such a thing as agricultural engineering. And then I learned that there was a program with that major in St. Paul, which was a lot closer, and I had two sisters living there. So I went to St. Paul, got my bachelor's degree, and was looking for work, kind of wanted to stay around the Twin Cities, you know, just friends in church and things like that, and then went, found an advertisement for a job at South Dakota State University for a master's program, and one of my professors at Minnesota said, you should go for that. So I went over to South Dakota State, got a master's degree, and then came back to St. Paul and worked on a PhD. And then didn't have a lot of job postings, I guess, that I really saw. But there was an opening in Fargo, and my wife says, well, we're going to Fargo. She just knew that that was kind of what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so here I've been since a long time ago, 1991, we came here. And so it's been a good fit for us.
Are you more – so if you describe what – I guess your background, are you mechanical, more hydrology now? What realm of the ag engineer would you classify yourself as?
Okay, so probably my favorite class in undergraduate. Okay, two areas. One is kind of the calculus level math, just problem solving. And then fluid mechanics is a big thing. And then so I kind of gravitated towards the soil and water engineering, just like water in the rural environment, hydrology, irrigation, drainage, those types of topics, and put some math and engineering on top of that. And that's kind of the area. So I'm not so much a machinery or processing type person, but the environmental and soil and water kind of engineering.
So I like it. I describe it, and tell me if I'm wrong, you're a soil physicist by an engineer. Our soil physicist works with all water. Like that's in my world, our soil physics are all about water dynamics in a soil.
They are, but I would not classify myself up there with the soil physicists in terms of, you know, that kind of expertise. But we certainly use a lot of soil physics in our work. So to understand the principles that they teach is fundamental to managing water in the crop root zone and things like that.
Well, Dr. Steele, tell me a little bit about your program. What are you guys doing up at NDSU? Where the water does freeze.
The water does, yeah, it does freeze. We're about 9 below this morning. So yeah, it's all frozen. But anyway, so we've had a project with the Natural Resource Conservation Service on what they have is called an Environmental Quality Incentives Program, and they're outfitting farmers with cost share to outfit the farmers with a variable rate irrigation. So there's what I would call like a vanilla irrigation system. It's uniform application of water all the way around the field. But then you can get systems where you can speed up and slow down the irrigation system. And that's kind of like sector-based or a piece of pie shaped wedges. And then there's what they call zone control, which would be like speed up, slow down the machine, but also turn on and off individual sprinklers. And they do kind of what they call a pulse width modulation for sprinkler control. And so you might see like crop herbicide or fungicide sprayers doing a pulse width, like turning on and off sprinklers 10 times a second. Well, with irrigation systems, it's more like 30 seconds on or 30 seconds off, or maybe 40-20, depending on you more or less. And so to put that kind of valving and control on an irrigation system costs money. And the NRCS is willing to do cost share with farmers. And they require soil moisture monitoring and irrigation water management plans to be in the field. Soil moisture monitoring with telemetry for 3 years up to 5 years. And that's kind of their program requirements for cost share. And so one of the things the NRCS wanted to do was to build the technical capacity of their engineers or agronomists or soil scientists. And so we went out in the field and put in a bunch of different types of sensors, and pretty much actually there's all kinds of sensors for soil water content and soil water potential, but we pretty much stuck with the ones that the irrigation dealers were selling or providing with their irrigation equipment more likely to be used. And so what we're trying to do is help the NRCS engineers and others become more familiar with installation, removal, data sets, and accuracy of sensors and that kind of thing. So that's been a project, and we're kind of still, you know, in the report writing mode from that project. It was 3 years of field work, and we learned a lot, and I think we're a good project. And one of the things I should say for variable rate irrigation, some of the drivers of that are the prairie pothole region in North Dakota, where we've got these, okay, so I've got 2 acres of a marsh or, you know, some wetland in the middle of my field, and I want to shut off the water and not irrigate the ducks and the reeds and things like that. Or another real important one is the potato farming situation, where if potato farmers have a depressional area and they don't want to overwater that depressional area, the crop is there, but if it's overwatered, then they can have fungal diseases and have problems with potato quality either in the field or subsequently in the bin. And so there, that's kind of a driver for variable rate irrigation, or some of the drivers for variable rate irrigation.
Makes a ton of sense. I've got a whole list of things I want to address. One is just a fun story. My first dealings with pulse width modulation was in my master's. Late 90s, early 2000s, and we were doing variable rate nitrogen on a very small scale. And so our engineer, Dr. John Soli, who passed away a few years back, John had built a wonderful system. So he used a sprayer from a car wash and a series of PVC valves, ball valves, along with a modulator on the bottom and a spray tip, cycled back into a 12-volt battery that we held in a fanny pack on our side. And that spray wand and PVC ball valve system traveled the state, if not the nation. But that was my first understanding of that's how we were able to put maybe 10 mils or 20 mils of fertilizer across an area of 3 or 4 meters square. And it's really fascinating to see that that technology go from, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s, where it really wasn't utilized, to now it's almost mainstream on sprayers, where we see that utilization of the pulse width modulation to really give our sprayers a much wider range of water, of application. And so all that to say, how much range does adding pulse width modulation to a irrigation system add? Does it really allow that system to flex water range? You know, is it changing it from a half an inch to an inch and a half, or is the range more of a quarter inch? Or what's a precision that you can hit with that?
I'm maybe not an expert in doing this, but you can't go over 100%. A lot of times a farmer would put on, say, like the potato farmers would put on 3/4 or 66/10 of an inch. We say 60/100, 75/100 of an inch of water. And you can shut it down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a point at which you apply maybe 1/10 of an inch of water. And what are you doing? You're maybe delivering some fertilizer, but are you really getting water into the crop root zone? That's another kind of lower limit on these kind of systems. And on the high end, you can't go over 100%. So whatever the irrigation system is designed for, that's your upper limit. So those are some parameters in there. I don't know if I should speak too much to this issue because I'm not so much of an expert on it, but I think those are some of the parameters that people have to think through.
That's a great conversation. I hadn't even thought about that because you're absolutely, we do a lot of work on irrigation rate, and there's a point where you just shouldn't apply. If you're already in the 6/10 is 100%, is there much flex in that besides off? Is it really on or off at that point?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think some of these machines are probably designed for higher irrigation application rates. We talk about gallons per minute per acre as far as an irrigation system flow rate design parameter. And in North Dakota, I think we're trying to look at about 6/10 of an inch or six gallons per minute per acre as a flow rate. So our upper design is probably in the range. And there's a conversion to inches depth equivalent of rainfall. Like if we want to apply 3/10 or 30/100 of an inch of water depth equivalent in a day, what kind of irrigation flow rate do we need to do that? And they specify these on a gallons per minute per acre so that if the irrigation system varies, you know, some irrigation systems will cover 100 acres, some 120 and 100, some 133. And then you got end guns and all this stuff. So to normalize it on the basis of an acre is something that needs to be taken into consideration. But I want to say this, that when you're growing potatoes, you're probably rotating corn and soybeans or corn and wheat or things like that. And you know, with a corn crop, 6/600, you know, 2/3 of an inch, that's not a lot of water. So they might be trying to put on 3/4 of an inch or an inch of water, maybe a little bit more even, depending on soils and timing and, you know, what other jobs do I need to do during the summer? Okay, just to be fair to the farmers. So I think the potato farmers may kind of taper that back a little bit and do the more frequent irrigations. Because a potato farmer, they don't have a lot of root zone depth to work with. Corn crop, you maybe have 3 feet, but in some of this potato ground, you know, if you're managing 12 or 18 inches, that's maybe what you got to work with. And so you got to be around the circle more frequently. So there's all kinds of parameters. And this is kind of fun stuff to work with.
I guess my first question would be, I want to compare, let's say, my Oklahoma corn irrigation to North Dakota corn irrigation. Then we'll move to potatoes. So for us, most of our current research here in the central southern plains has shown that we really want to slow down that pivot and put more water on to force the water deeper, because the fast turns and the high evaporation are less efficient. So putting on a 3/4 inch application is less efficient than an 1.25 inches because I'm trying to push it deeper in our soils that can hold it. Is that similar in your corn crop as you go north into the Dakotas, or does the environment and soils change enough?
I don't know that there's a lot of, and I could be mistaken here, but I don't know that they're pushing a lot more than an inch per revolution. But I see your point. If you're going to lose 1/10 of an inch due to like an 85% efficiency and you've got an inch of water being applied, then what are you talking, 1/15 of an inch? And regardless if you apply 7/500 or 1.25, you subtract off that one. And so the fraction of loss goes down as your amount goes up. And so But, you know, I have to say there's some other things going on here is that, like, if somebody has to do a windshield wiper and only go around 270 degrees, then they've got other timing considerations. So that's, you know, that's another thing.
And we, like you, I mean, this is something. So we're talking wipers. And so, you know, both of us have mile wipers where we're talking a half mile from one end of the pivot to the other and you're wiping. So your long run is a 1 mile straight line, but it's not a mile, of course, by the turn. And so getting it from one end of the mile to the other end of the mile, you can go to some significant stress if it's going too short from the other end.
Yep. Yep.
How does irrigation scheduling help with some of this stuff? How do we schedule, especially on those, in my mind, one of the most complex are these really big systems where it takes so long to get around. And a wiper to me is even more complex because you owe a long time, but then you double right back on the ends.
So the question on irrigation schedule, let's define irrigation scheduling is how much water to apply and when to apply it. And I would say another with variable rate is where to apply it. In other words, you want the water to go where it's needed and give you the best bang for the buck. And so there's different approaches to that, you know, in terms of a water balance or our crop sensing, remote sensing. So like a water balance keeps track of, like, if I pull out my checkbook and we've got a kind of like a bank account and the soil is our bank account, we've got withdrawals and deposits. And so it's your deposits are the rain and irrigation. Your withdrawals are the crop water use and things like the deep percolation and maybe some runoff, some things like that. Kind of like with your withdrawals, you got to pay groceries, you got to pay bills and gas, housing and taxes. Okay. So some of it's, you know, you just got to keep track of those things. So we keep track of a bank, an accounting system. And that's one way to do it. And you can do that at a single point or multiple points in a field. If I had a windshield wiper, I'd want to keep track of the starting and ending points and see how I'm doing to, you know, make sure kind of like you get back to that starting point in time. And then the how much, you know, can be dependent on crop water use. And then the where gets into the variable rate. So you want to not over irrigate those low spots or not, you know, not cause disease problems. That's just one approach. There are also crop-based sensing type of things, like some people would work on canopy temperature or some other vegetative indices that I think canopy temperature is probably the biggest one, especially when you start talking about remote sensing. It's just a whole big field, and we could probably talk for hours about about different approaches. I mean, there's people developing right now some satellite imagery working with radar and radar sensing. You know, it only go into maybe top 6 inches of the soil, but they're doing modeling and they're keeping track of weather and soils and doing some estimation of crop water needs and trying to estimate when the crop is going to need water and then actually run the irrigation system. So people are pushing the envelope on how much control they have and monitoring.
Dr. Steele, this might be more, I guess this question, this is a fun conversation because I play in irrigation, I don't do irrigation. So in a lot of our irrigated acres, it's a little bit different than, say, maybe the primary corn belt that has irrigation or even the southeast that has irrigation. For us, when we turn on our pivots, they don't shut off. There's a lot of reasons why, but typically because our ET is just so great is that we start positive and by the end of our cropping season, we'll probably be right at neutral, if not net negative, as far as total ET and application. So when we turn on our pivots, they don't stop. For one, if they stop, they probably get stuck, but they don't turn off. Is North Dakota in the we turn it on when we need it? Or is it in the region when they kick on, it's more about they don't stop and we can adjust how much water is applied during the run?
Well, of course, that's going to depend on the season. You know, you get a hot, dry season, it's going to pretty much keep up. And if you have the full water supply, you can do that. Our Department of Water Resources is not going to allocate water where it's not sufficient, or that's their goal anyway, is to not infringe on the resource in terms of aquifers or surface waters. I think there's maybe more stoppage due to the rain that will help us catch up sometimes. And sometimes it's pretty wet, so then we don't do so much irrigation. So it's kind of a range.
Gotcha. I guess one caveat audience should know is most of our irrigation lies in a region that gets less than 20 inches of rainfall a year. And so that we're in the 14 to 18 inches annual rainfall trying to grow 300 bushel corn. And so you typically don't do that much corn yield on 16 to 17 inches of rainfall.
Sure. So we probably should talk about evapotranspiration, which is kind of a coined phrase of evaporation plus transpiration, because it's hard to measure. I mean, people can do it, but it's hard to separate transpiration from the canopy or from the crop leaves and surface evaporation from the soil. So we lump it and we call it evapotranspiration or ET. And I would imagine your ETs are quite a bit higher than ours up here. So, you know, that's another factor that, you know, as far as keeping up with an irrigation system.
Our max ETs can easily hit 3/4 of an inch a day.
Okay, yeah. So you're...
That's why we also don't shut off, is that our normal ET is half an inch. But during peak, where we're, you know, we'll be a 100 and plus degrees at 30% humidity with... you know, V12 corn, that tends to pull a lot in the system.
Right. So you're pulling a lot more water out of the soil than we are up here.
Yeah. The fun thing about our irrigation is we try to start with a full profile because we don't leach a lot in the high plains just because our ET tends to be so high. So we can pre-water. We'd like to have 3 to 4 foot of water.
Okay.
We will plant and maybe need to water up the seed, but hopefully we don't need to water up the seed. And then kick on about five leaf, six leaf, depending on our weather. And usually by black layer, if you look at your net water balance, we're really close to zero on an average year.
So you're ramping up by what, mid-May, you're going full bore?
Yeah.
Okay. So
mid-May to June, yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking up here, you know, July and August are the big months for irrigation, and maybe a little bit different climate patterns. And so we got to pay attention to that, you know, getting in, you know, and I shouldn't say that's always like, you know, I ask my students, you know, how often, you know, how much, what's the ET for the season and what's the average rainfall? And so if you get 18 inches of ET and 12 inches of rainfall, you need 6 inches of irrigation, right? And it's a trick question, because if all the rain of that 12 inches comes on May 1st and you get nothing the rest of the season, then you still need 18 inches or whatever the ET is. And so that's where the scheduling comes in. So that's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of fun to play with that a little bit.
And I like that. That was a perfect transition because I do, I have a 3-way appointment, so I teach. I want to hear a little bit about your teaching and about the students that go through, you know, what are your goals for them to come out of your classes with, you know, what skill sets are you helping develop?
Okay. So yeah, thanks. So we have two programs. One's an agricultural and biosystems engineering. And so that's a typical engineering program. You get the calculus and physics and chemistry and statics and dynamics and all thermodynamics, fluid mechanics, all this standard engineering that pretty much all engineers. And then we get into our more discipline specific topics. And we have a program in agriculture, and it's kind of morphed into some over time in some different program names. Right now, we're calling it agricultural technology. And so I teach a sophomore level class for each of those groups of students. One's an engineering student that's fairly, you know, that's got a good math background, and the other's the agriculture students. And so what I'm teaching is half a semester of problem solving with a spreadsheet and half a semester, more or less, of some computer-aided design with two-dimensional drawing. And so what we try to do with the spreadsheets, and I'll get to the graduate level classes a little bit later, but we're trying to get students familiarity with some, you know, basic usage of Excel in, or a spreadsheet in a, I should rewind that. I'm not supposed to use names here. So let's edit that out.
I'll drop R and SAS and all that stuff. Okay. It's okay. I say Excel that I teach. That's the challenge we have, is that I would like to see more of our undergraduates be able to use Excel. Even our grad students don't have some basic Excel knowledge. And so,
yeah. So what we're doing with spreadsheets is some working with formulas, evaluating formulas, doing some descriptive statistics, some lookup formulas, some pivot tables, some calibration problems with linear regression. For the engineers, we do a little curve fitting with exponential and power functions. We do some optimization. And mostly we're scratching the surface. And sometimes I think my job is to help students understand what the questions are and where they can find answers, because I don't have all the answers. I mean, Excel does this much, and we look at, you know, just a little bit of part of it and get them oriented. And the same with the two-dimensional drawing software. We're using AutoCAD, but if students have other software. So what we can do is, for the agriculture students, is there's tools in there that they can go in and look at their home farm. If they're from a farm, look at an aerial photo and then draw over the top of it and hide the map. And then they have a working drawing. And one group did their capstone project of, let's expand the grain handling facilities for our farm. And so where are you going to put the bins? Where are you going to put the scale, the driveway, or whatever, that kind of stuff. For the engineers, we have them do a two-dimensional layouts, like manufacturing floor plans, so that if somebody at a manufacturing facility and they're an engineer, they don't say, okay, I think the welding booth was over here and the laser cutter was over there. They've got drawings that they bring in and lay out their equipment lines or their assembly lines and that kind of thing. And so it was really encouraging to me. One time a student came in and he brought in this like 3-foot by 4-foot layout of this manufacturing facility. And he says, I was the go-to guy at my work with AutoCAD. And it's like, oh, wow, it's just, they're using this stuff. So that's really cool. And then to move on a little bit, I teach a senior and graduate level course. One of the standard textbooks, I think I grew up, this is a soil and water conservation engineering. I think I bit my teeth or cut my teeth on the third edition. Now they're up to the seventh edition. But it's kind of talks about things like, I like to say, water in the rural environment, and put some math and engineering on it. So we talk about precipitation, and there's frequency, duration, intensity. There's evapotranspiration, evaporation, open channel flow, vegetated waterways, drainage, irrigation topics, pumps, soil erosion. So it's very broad, but not very deep, but it kind of gives an overview of, here's some of the questions, or here's some resources that you can use to solve engineering problems. And I think it's good for people in the environmental area. It's been kind of that text has stood the test of time. I think it's, you know, it's a good text. And so we try to do that. And then we do some lab, you know, field trips, lab experiments, infiltration. I put up some little planter boxes in the lab, and we grow potatoes or wheat or something like that. The first time we did it, we ate our project at the end of the year. I brought some salsa and sour cream and cheese, and we ate the potatoes that we grew in the lab. So that was kind of fun.
That's fantastic.
It's time for our famous three.
Well, Dean, I hate to say this, but we're already out of time. It's been too easy to talk with you, and there's so much things that I think is really relevant, both on the research and application of what you're doing on irrigation, the education side. I think we dig all day. But I have to transition into our three final questions. And so my first question, you know, is, I think you've already given a little bit of hint to what might be one of your answers, is what's been a go-to work resource for you when you're throughout your career?
Yeah, so that would be one of the books, you know, the soil and water conservation engineering. As far as, you know, getting into irrigation scheduling, I would look at Dr. Steve Evett at the ARS Agriculture Research Service station in Bushland, Texas. And he's got a couple of PowerPoints or documents on soil water sensors for agriculture. And he really does a thorough job of putting that together. I think another one might be the standards that we look at for agricultural and biological engineers. There's books that have standard practices, and so we don't reinvent the wheel, that kind of thing. So
next question is, what is your favorite leisurely activity? What do you do in your free time?
So I'm a family guy. I have to say that we're empty nesters now. So our travel budget is higher. so we go south. We've got, two of our children in Phoenix and one in Omaha. So that's a good reason to get out of Fargo in the middle of winter. I like to run. I like to read my Bible, learn about God. And so those are things that light up my day.
Fantastic. And finally, where do people go to find out more about your program?
I think if you put Dean Steele NDSU into a search engine on the web, you'll find me. So you'll find some things about me. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's been an honor to participate in the podcast here.
Well, thank you, Dean. So folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by Wyzenetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Dr. Dean Steele, Associate Professor of Irrigation and Environmental Engineer at North Dakota State University. Remember, if you enjoyed what you've heard today, click that subscribe button so you get notifications on when we drop a new podcast. Also, remember to share this video with your friends and peers, especially if you've enjoyed it and learned something new. And finally, we love hearing comments. We love hearing suggestions. Share with us what you want to see. And if you have any questions for our guests or suggestions for new guests. Again, thank you so much, Dean, for joining. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Brian.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.